However, there are several reasons why, in my view, the business model for the European Union is not likely to work anymore. And these are the reasons why. Globalization has reduced the relative importance of geography as a determinant of economic growth and prosperity. Sharp reductions in the cost of transport and communications have drastically reduced the importance of location. More and more, the most competitive economies in the world are those that have managed to boost the skills of the labor force, that have developed open, transparent, and reliable institutions, and that offer a measure of political and social stability. Success, in fact, seems to depend far more on policies and institutions than on where the country happens to be located. In light of this, it would appear then that the European Union ought to be thought of less as a political geography and more as a group of member states sharing mutually agreed rules, policies, and institutions, which to a great extent have less and less to do with location. The recent voter fatigue with European Union expansion may have less to do with a waning of European Union citizens' commitment to the sense of community that underpins the European Union, and more to do with the perception that, since political leaders have largely seen expansion as a process fueled by geographical considerations, they have been forced to take in members which are not yet ready to assume the full responsibilities of membership. The incorporation of Bulgaria and Romania is a case in point, two countries with levels of transparency in government far behind the rest of the European Union. If the European Union were to be seen increasingly as a union based on shared policies and institutions and respect for commonly agreed rules, it is doubtful, it seems to me, that it would have expanded quite so quickly, opting perhaps for a longer period of institutional consolidation in some of its candidate states. Similar comments apply to Turkey, a country where only recently there was high likelihood that the Constitutional Court could have banned the country's main political party, and hence its duly elected government, a decision that would no doubt have led the European Court of Human Rights to rule that its Charter of Human Rights had been violated. Now, all of this suggests that European Union leaders, intent on consolidating the achievements of the past 50 years, should not confine their vision for the European Union to bringing in those states currently in its periphery, but rather should focus their attention on those states which, having established a credible track record of good policies, sound institutions, and shared political values, would agree to submit themselves to the competitive pressures of the European Union market, the discipline of its institutions and its agreed rules, regardless of where they may be located. Let the European Union turn itself into an open club of like-minded nations. Let it change its name, if necessary, from the European Union to the UNW, a Union of the Nations of the World. Rather than sowing the seeds of a dozen crises in the future on Turkey, on Ukraine, and the many aspirants currently on its periphery, but which are not likely to be ready for a long time to come, on whether the Irish will eventually bend to pressures and approve the Lisbon Treaty, on whether the European Union will find a coherent way to deal with an emerging and authoritarian Russia on which it is dangerously energy dependent, let it focus instead on inviting the Koreas and the Chiles of this world, countries that, except for increasingly irrelevant geography, are already operating at levels of efficiency and competence well above the European Union average. Let me focus for a minute or two on these two countries, purely by way of an example, on why Chile might be an ideal candidate. Well, it has already surpassed most European Union members in the quality of its macroeconomic management. Chile's institutions, property rights, a judicial system, a regulatory framework, a trade regime, and social security system are already operating at well above average European Union levels. In terms of corruption, the clarity of its rules, the general investment climate, Chile is already well ahead of such European Union members as Italy and Greece, and most of the new European Union states in Central and Eastern Europe. Aside from the obvious fact that it does not share a physical border with the European Union, Chile, the only country in Latin America to have a free trade agreement with the European Union and the United States, is already an European Union member in spirit. As for Korea, well, it is a powerhouse for technology and innovation, a huge market with a sophisticated and highly trained labor force, already well ahead of much of Europe in such areas as the quality of its higher education, company spending on research and development, patent registration, the penetration of all the latest technologies, internet, broadband, mobile telephones. Korea is, without doubt, one of the most successful development experiences of the past 50 years. Chile's membership in the European Union would have implications that go well beyond the addition of one more small state to its growing list of small economies. It will give the European Union an important institutional presence in Latin America, a region with which it has rapidly growing trade links. The European Union would benefit from bringing into its midst an economy with an enviable growth record and in a privileged position in all competitiveness rankings. Most important, Chilean membership in the European Union would unleash a powerful chain of incentives in Latin America, as happened in Central and Eastern Europe during the past decade and a half. With Chile in, one can easily foresee that the political debate in Latin America would take on a more high-minded character. Uruguayans and Costa Ricans might immediately ask themselves, what do we need to do to qualify? This is exactly the sort of question that should be raised in the region to shift the focus of attention away from the sort of populist demagoguery of recent years, which, if allowed to run its course, could well turn the region into an increasingly irrelevant appendage of the global economy. Looking ahead, one thing is clear. The relentless pace of technological change is rapidly creating an integrated global economy and leading to a growing consciousness of global citizenship. As European Union political leaders seek to address the consequences of the Irish veto in 2008, they might well discover that the time has come to think of Europe less in the traditional and necessarily limiting paradigms of physical proximity and more in the new language of the 21st century, where physical barriers, borders, and notions of distance are giving way to the realities of the oneness of mankind.